When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Theora.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters.
And we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, queers. What's on the Big Gay agenda today, Theora?
Today, we are talking about a long-anticipated and very beloved super gay show called Our Flag Means Death. Yay!
Woo! Oh, gosh, I have the hiccups.
Okay, so this is a show that, like, I've been pestering Caitlin about, and I'm like, Caitlin, the show's really funny. We should watch it. And then a bunch of people started following us on Twitter, and I was like, we definitely have to watch it now. So here we are talking about Our Flag.
But it's not like I was saying, no, we're not. We just have a lot.
We're very busy with filming. So here we are. All right. So basically we're going to spend many episodes going through the two seasons of Our Flag Means Death. If you haven't watched it and don't want to be spoiled, just stick around in the beginning for the first like 5-10 minutes. And we'll do like a spoiler-free review if you don't know what it's about, to kind of give you a heads up, and you can decide whether or not you want to watch it. Afterwards, we will be spoiling everything from the first episode to the very, very last. But don't worry, we will give a warning when we get there.
Yes. And we may have a guest throughout our Flag Means Death coverage. You may know her as Zoe. No, her name is Zoe.
You may know her as Zoe, because that's her name. She's been in our reaction videos.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. You may know her from our reaction videos. It's been a long day already.
It's been a day.
It's going to get longer. Oh, yeah. So, before we get into our non-spoiler section, I need to do what I am always doing, but this is the first. Okay, anyway, let me just read this. If you're watching, yes, if you're watching this podcast on YouTube, be sure to subscribe to our channel, give this video a like, and drop a comment below to share your thoughts. We absolutely love hearing from you. For our podcast listeners, please download this episode and leave a review if you can. Your engagement helps us reach a broader audience and spread the joy of queer content. Also, share the link to a friend. You never know. Share it to one person and they might relate to it and feel seen. That's the goal. For even more exclusive queer content, early access to videos, and full reaction videos to Our Flag Means Death and others, join us on Patreon. Dive into discussions on our Discord channel where we enjoy connecting with all of you. It's a super fun time. We need more of you to join. We need more Our Flag Means Death people. So come shout about it with us. I lost where I am. Explore our merchandise at biggayenergypod.com to show your support. All links will be in the description. Lastly, stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following at biggayenergypod. Your interactions mean the world to us, and these actions contribute to our ongoing celebration of queer media and advocacy for better representation.
Woo! Yay, Caitlin! Yay. And if you have suggestions of things you'd like us to cover, people you'd like us to interview, books you'd like us to read and talk about, leave them in the comments. Like, our goal is to find out about new queer media too, so please help enlighten us and give us new things to talk about.
And another reason to join the Patreon, well, one, you get access to all our Flag Means Death, well, all interviews a day early, but we also ask our Patreon for questions before we ask Twitter. Sometimes we don't ask Twitter if we have enough people on Patreon asking questions.
For interviews is what we're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, for interviews. Sorry. It's Theor is here to clarify for my brain.
And we also ask, like, what content do you want? So, like, yeah. Patreon gets access to, like, influencing what we do, basically, before anyone else. So if you want to influence the Big Gay Energy Podcast, become a Patreon.
And it only costs $5 a month.
Five doubloons. So that's that. Now, we're going to jump into Our Flag Means Death. So, if you've never watched it and you want to watch it, it is currently, at the time of this recording, streaming on HBO Max. And yes, I'm going to use that term because I refuse to call it Max because that's a stupid name for a streaming service.
I mean, it is the title, though. HBO Max.
HBO Max.
Okay.
All offense. Because they canceled Our Flag Means Death before they can complete their third and final season. Okay, so... So, but don't let that deter you. Honestly, it ends in a place that's pretty, like, it tells a story.
Yeah, it doesn't feel satisfying. If you didn't know, like, anything about the show and you watched it, you're like, oh, this is a good ending. This is right, where exactly. It was meant to end.
Yes. It's not like Warrior Nun, where one person jumps in a portal and the other one doesn't, and they don't get to say I love you to each other. It doesn't end like that at all. It actually is pretty satisfying.
That may as well been a Bury Your Gaze thing.
That literally was a terrible ending. Like, come on now. Anyway, so, Caitlin, would you like to tell everybody about what Our Flag Means Death is?
Sure. Based on the true adventures of 18th century would-be pirate? Steed Bonnet.
He was a pirate.
This is what Google says. After trading in the seemingly charmed life of a gentleman for one of a swashbuckling buccaneer, Steed becomes captain of the pirate ship Revenge. Struggling to earn the respect of his potentially mutinous crew, Steed's fortunes change after a fateful run-in with the infamous Captain Blackbeard. Steed and crew attempt to get their ship together and survive life on the high seas.
I'm sorry, that sounds really funny. Get your ship together.
I'm surprised they didn't use that.
Get your ship together.
Stop with the merch. There's so many designs I have to make.
That we still haven't
made. I need people to, if you want any of these designs that we've talked about in our reaction videos, if you haven't checked those out, make sure you do. And anything we talk about here, please let me know, because if there's no interest, I'm not going to bother. But if you are interested in what these, and they were co-captains. Turning something into whatever, I have to go back. There's a whole record.
Let us know.
What is it? Get your ship together.
Get your ship together.
Yes. So. Okay.
So, moving on. In a non-spoilery way, how would you describe Our Flag Means Death using up to 3 words?
Yeah, I would say
lawless queer joy.
I forgot what I wrote. I know. Okay, so mine is queer pirates pirate with a question mark on the end.
And Zoe's not here, but I have to read theirs because not only did they not follow the rules, but also it's accurate. So Zoe wrote, be gay, do crime, which is the shirt I wore today.
I was planning on giving them shit for not following the 3 words, but it's accurate.
It is accurate. Okay, so, all right, to sum up the non-spoilery section, we are going to let you know how much we would hydrate for lesbian Jesus. So if you've never been here before and you don't know what that's all about, this is a scoring system that was developed by the Big Gay Energy Scientists, which is a super accurate method for determining how valuable a piece of queer media is to the queer media library. Why are we hydrating? Because queer media, like water, is essential for life. So, Caitlin, how much would you hydrate for lesbian Jesus?
9, because there could be more queers. Not everyone is queers.
So many people are queer.
They are. No, I don't know. I haven't finished my scale. I told you. I don't know if the scale will ever be done. But
I think I would hydrate all the water on the high seas for this crew.
I mean, yeah, okay, fine. I'll give it a 10. I stick with numbers.
Honestly,
I don't know what I was basing the 9 off of. I finally gave in and gave Heartstopper a 10. So, like, it takes a lot to give me to give a 10 out.
I mean, Heartstopper is a 10. It's hard to give it. Heartstopper is, like, perfect. Heartfly Penis, honestly, it's great because it's adults being adults. And just, like, it just, the queer joy of it all, honestly, is so refreshing.
Because you know while what? There's... I will give it a 10 because of the non-binary rep and the conversation with Steed and Mary.
That was cute. And just, like, Ed and Steed's journey was really sweet. And then, like, there's a lot of other queer characters and queer journeys. And, like, Calypso's birthday on its own is, like, a 10. Yeah. Honestly, this show is really special and fantastic. And another thing I really appreciate about it is the episodes are 30 minutes long, which...
Yes.
I appreciate that so much. Like, just to have something quick and satisfying that's funny and upbeat. I want more shows like this.
Let's mention, it's 30 minutes long. Theor's notes are still like it's an hour episode, though.
No, they are definitely are not. Like, my notes are like, they don't even fill a page per episode.
No, there's just a lot to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about. And just, it's very satisfying. Like, I enjoy it. All right. So, that's the, at this point we have transitioned. We're transitioning into our spoiler zone for the rest of this the episodes that we're going to do about this. So if you haven't seen Our Flag Means Death and you are now titulated and interested, go to HBO Max and go watch it. It'll take you a couple hours.
Weird word.
You're welcome.
That's your word. Go spell that in the comments without looking.
Spell titulated and use it somehow. I was titulated by
Vicky. Use it in a review.
Use it in a review. No, please. Be that. That'd be so funny. Anyway, we're gonna cover it now, and we're gonna basically cover it chronologically from like first episode to last episode, so you can kind of like follow along that way. So let's get into all the super queer content. So let's start. Just a little overview, set the premise, because you kind of said it in your spoiler-free review. But basically, this story is essentially like alternate universe historical fiction.
Yes, and as I've done like slight research into behind the scenes, emphasis on the fiction part, because there's like a running joke where they didn't actually do any research for it. So emphasis is on fiction. Don't I'm expect historically accurate representation. I did see an interview where Taika was like, as soon as I heard that it's like loosely, but like no one actually knows the true story of Blackbeard, he's correct. Like, that's bullshit. I'll just create my own. While Rhys actually took sailing lessons.
He would. That's cute. I mean, is that not the two characters?
It's really funny.
Oh, my God. It's like, I'm going to do all the things to be prepared for this. Oh, my God. That's so Steed and Ed Godin. So funny. Yeah. So, basically, it is loosely based on Steed Bonnet and Blackbeard, essentially during a time period where they met and sailed together and became co-captains, ? Nobody really knows what happened. They just know that there was this period of time where they were together. And so, the writers of the show were like,
so they were together.
They were together. We know historically they met. There was a period of time they sailed together, but nobody really knows what happened during that time. So like this is like an alternate universe of like, well, what if they were gay? And like, basically we're like, what if they were gay lovers? How does that work? And that's basically the show.
Yeah, I don't know anything about history in general, but definitely nothing about pirates. I'm pretty sure like most of my life I thought it was just a made up thing.
No, I mean, piracy exists now, but, like, basically, yeah, so it takes place during the golden age of piracy, and that's basically at a time where, like, all the empires of the world, Western empires, kind of, like, were pretty stationary in their, like, empires, and were trading with each other, and so people who had, like, no life prospects, essentially, in the countries were like, fuck this, and, like, went to the sea to just, like, pillage all this trading and then make their own money, because the ocean was lawless, and they're just like, we'll escape the crowns and just do our own thing. But it got to a point, the golden age, it got to a point where it was so bad that basically the governments, the imperialists were like, fuck, we got to do something about this because we're losing all of our shit and like all of our supplies. And they're, so they made navies and like, we're trying to stop them. And that's, you can see that sprinkled through the show. So like,
that's where navies came from.
No, I mean, navies always existed, but they used the navies to go after these pirates.
Got it.
Navies were used for, you know, war, sea battles and like imperialism and colonialism, all that shit. But like, they hyped up these navies to like go after the pirates because they were losing money.
Not to make this like a history lesson, but I'm dumb or just don't, I'm not knowledgeable. Is the sea lawless like now?
I mean, there's something called maritime law where there is like laws associated with the sea, but there are pockets, like they call like international waters where it's like, well, whose jurisdiction is this? I don't know enough about it, but I'm sure there are pockets where like, well, nobody sees it. How do you know it happened? Like,
if a tree falls in a forest and no one's around to hear it.
Wait, if two men fall in love on the ocean, did it happen? We don't know. Like, that's basically the historical gap we have with Steed and Ed. And so what we do know is that eventually Steed get, and I think where season three possibly was headed was like the reality of it is that Steed was like captured at some point and put on trial. So there's like the trials of Steed Bonnet and his pirate crew. And that's kind of where we're getting some of this other information from about like who was on his ship. And like, he kind of told his side of the story. And that's like a historical document we have of what happened to Steed. But the thing that is definitely integrated into the show is the fact that Steed wasn't a typical pirate. Like, he literally was a privileged white man in the imperialist society. Like, he was living in a Caribbean island, Barbados specifically, that was colonized by England. He owned slaves, like, not a great role model of a person, but like, he was a typical man of his time that was extremely privileged. And he said, fuck it. And like, decided to be a pirate, which was the antithesis of like who he, like the society he was grown into. And so he was actually known as like the gentleman pirate, like actually historically. And like it said in the show, polite menace was his brand. Cause you know,
I'm good with just pretending like the show is fully accurate. Because I would like to think that this is what actually happened.
I like
the mermaid included.
Exactly. So then, and then Edward teaches Blackbeard, the famous Blackbeard, who's on here. And then we have Zhang Yi Cao, I think. I'm probably saying that wrong, and I apologize. Who shows up in season two, whom, like, I've been waiting for a TV show about this person for so long because I heard about her a long time ago. And I was like, where is her television show? Because this woman was real and was like the most successful pirate of all time. She was known as the Pirate Queen. But and she basically like took over China. Like, like her husband was a pirate, basically. And she like doubled his fleet, took over the Chinese, like, and like basically held China hostage until they got to the end of like the golden age of piracy. And she like was so good at negotiating. Basically, she negotiated with China and was like, pardon my 80,000 people, like fleet crew. And they did. And so she got to live out her life very comfortably. Like, so she was the most successful pirate of all times, not just like a woman, like of all time. So like, I love that she shows up and like how she's portrayed, because like, she was the most successful, like more successful than Blackbeard. And like,
they need to give her a spinoff then.
She deserves a show just about. I agree. Like, her life is fascinating, like, actually. So, like, I love that she shows up. All right. So that's, like, the backstory of, like, this AU that we're in about all these really cool pirates. And it's just, like, a comedy and it's super fun. And so we start with episode one. And I love the way we set the tone with this, which it starts with Frenchie serenading us, basically. And he's, like, singing about what it's like to be a pirate. And he's, one of the lines is, a pirate's life is short but nice. So to me, like, this song, and particularly that line, sums up basically the significance of the whole show. Like, basically all these people are outlaws. Pirates are outlaws. And it's not an easy life. Like, the show does do a good job of like kind of showing you like, this is pretty dangerous what they're doing. There's no real stability here in general. Like, Steed makes things different, but like, in general, like, it's dangerous. But when they're out at sea and they're beyond the laws of the land, they can live authentically, right? So like, this whole, the trade-off is like, well, I can live my authentic self despite the risks. And I think that's the message of the show, not piracy in general, but like the message of the characters in the show. They'd rather be themselves, like, i.e. be queer in the 1700s when this happened, like out at sea. Even if it's just for a short time, I get to be me. So like, it's a short life, but it's nice. And I think that's like the thesis of the show.
So this kind of reminds me of Rainbow Islands, where they were exiled, but like they had a choice to either like live inauthentic and be with society or get exiled, but live their true selves.
If you don't know what we're talking about, that's a book we covered and we talked to the author about. It basically was based off this Tumblr post that was like, well, if gay people were all sent off to an island, that gay people would all die out because that's not how biology works or whatever. And so like all these people were just like writing all these things to be like, bisexual people exist and like all this stuff. And so Devin was like, let me write a book based on this post, and it's incredible. But yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of what piracy is in a way, like what they're trying to show, like all these people like kind of like left, quotes, normal society to just be who they are. And that's basically what Steed's journey is, because we really pick this up with Steed after he abandons his family, essentially, and like goes to live out his dream as a pirate. And we open with him and his crew, basically. And that's where the song is coming from. He's already kind of like pirating, kind of like he's getting started. He's got the crew, he's got the ship. And so, yeah. And the same thing can be said of Ed, like when they meet and kind of converge, like they're both on this journey of like abandoning their past selves or their past lives, basically, that didn't truly bring them joy. And so they embark on this co-captain adventure where they figure out how to be their authentic selves. So I like that the show immediately like tells you what this is going to be about and like sets the tone that it's going to be like, you know, funny and serious. And like, I love it.
This show, it's really funny.
It's so fun.
And it's one of the best parts about it.
Agreed.
But I want to talk about Steed's captain's style and like how he runs his crew. And I think it can be summed up as a respectful preschool teacher.
That's accurate.
So one of the first things we hear is his famous saying that he wants to teach his crew. And that's just, he wants them to be vulnerable and talk about their failings. So he's like, if we have an issue, we talk it through.
As a crew.
I was hoping you'd catch on to that. And I just think it's so great that he really cares about the mental health of his crew and encourages everyone to talk about, instead of bottling up, like, I'm assuming you normally do as a pirate, because I feel like pirates are not usually emotional beings.
I mean, yeah, look at Blackbeard, right? One of his intros is like, I don't know what fear is. Like, it's the pirates, like, it's like hyper masculinity, right? Where it's like the only emotion you're allowed to have is anger. And the only way you assert your authority is through fear tactics and like imposing a hierarchy where I'm the captain, you never question me, you just obey me or else. And Steed flips all of that on its head. And he's like, we're a team. Like let's process our emotions, not bottle them up or punch each other. Like he's trying to like,
okay, I don't know,
change all that.
Ed is an authoritative parent, whereas Steed is gentle parroting.
Literally, yeah. But it's like, that's how, you know, these environments where it's mostly men, like men, for all their, you know, saying that, you know, women are the subservient ones. It's like men really like hierarchies and like being subservient to like men, alpha men that they see above them. And that's what like Blackbeard's crew is. Whereas like, Steed was never once ever thought of as alpha male. Look at all his past trauma. Like, we'll talk about all that. Nobody thought anything of Steed. And Steed doesn't fit the bucket of, like, alpha male, hyper masculinity. Like, he's very much somebody who's in tune with his feelings and was forced to bottle them up because that's what being a man is or whatever. So now that he's out on the crew and he doesn't have to hide any of that, he's like, no, let's, like, you know, when you're having feelings, have them. Let's talk about it. Let's do an art project. Like, let's, like, be constructive about this. And the end result is, like, it ends up bonding his crew together a lot better than, like, you know, because when you're in, like, the fear tactic world, we see other, like, pirate crews throughout the course of the two seasons. Like, you'll notice that, like, they mutiny. They're like, fuck this. We don't like this. Like, we'll just get a new captain. But with Steed, like, the crew is a lot, you know, more bonded by the end of it. Like, yeah, they try to mutiny, but, like, in the beginning, but...
It only lasts a few episodes.
But eventually they get to a better place and they're like, wow, we have it real good with Steed. Like, this is actually a better situation, you know?
Yeah. And going back to the preschool teacher thing, like, he gives them bedtime stories.
Oh my God, so cute. And he does the voices, and that's, like, everybody's favorite part, which is so cute and, like, a very preschool thing.
It's just, it's adorable that they want it. And, like, it's one of their favorite things. It's oh just, like, God. We can't mutiny. We wouldn't get the voices.
Right, exactly. Like, literally in the pilot, one of the reasons they refuse to mutiny is they're like, well, we need to know what happens next in Steve's bedtime story. And they're like, also, nobody else could do the voices right. So, like, we can't mutiny. We'll never know what happens. Just so cute. Funny.
And then, so that was nap time, bedtime. And then we have crafts. So Steed has them reframe their criticism to suggestions, which prompts the flag making scene. So they were all like throwing criticism around. He's like, okay, well, how can we reframe this? How can we make this something positive? You criticize that we don't have a flag. All right, let's make one. And then has everyone make one. So, and then he says that creative projects let his crew work out their problems in a healthier way, which is very true, and which is why there is art therapy, because it lets you, and sometimes you don't even know it's in there until you start creating something. That's usually how our episodes go too. Yeah, this is our creative arts therapy.
That's right. Welcome to Big Gay Therapy.
So one of the pirates, I forget who, makes a flag with a Frenchie makes a flag with a cat on it, which he says when Roche asks, what is it? Alright, I understand where this is going. Okay, so this is gonna be really random. But hopefully it resonates with at least a small subset of our audience. I have been watching another show from my childhood before this, so this has come from that. I have a little song for you. What's that? A cat? Crazy, funky, junky cat. Overslept. Probably purring. Trying to look like Salem Spellman. We've been there. We've done that. We see right through your funky cat. Now, if you know what that was a take on, let us know in the comments, because I know Theora wouldn't know.
I have no idea.
I was hoping if Zoe was here that maybe they would know. Because it was a kid's show. So, yeah. Welcome to my brain.
Thank you for that, Kaylin. I will say, though, back to the show, that I do love Frenchies. So, like, basically the point is they're all making all these flags, and everybody's trying to make the flag that they think is terrifying. And so it just shows you a lot about the character by what they think is terrifying. So Frenchie picks a cat, and I love the explanation. And he's like, because I think it's relatable, he's like, he's basically like, well, they have, like, knives on their on their paws and, like, all this stuff, which I think is really funny. But he also thinks they're witches. But
I think, like, that's, familiar. Like, the superstition against the black cat thing.
Oh, exactly. He's very superstitious. Like, his superstitions come out. But his, like, part of what he was talking about was, I thought, was relatable. It's like, they're little witches with knives on their feet. They do have knives on their feet. They are terrifying. And I love that this flag keeps coming up. And later on, Spanish Jackie sees it. She's like, is that a cat? And I like when Frenchie's always like, they're scary. like trying to defend this flag. Whenever he's like, why is there a cat on this?
I mean, cats different. Can be very terrified they because you terrifying. Don't know how they're going to react. Exactly. I'm always like, can I pet you?
They're tiny jungle cats. And we have a jungle cat later in the show. So anyway. But I love the whole flag making scene with Steed's crew, because I think it's a truly brilliant move. Because not only is he having them process feelings, like you said, I think it's more than that. By having the crew create, because the flag is like the symbol of the crew. It's like what the enemy sees. So it's a big deal to have a good flag. And so to basically let the crew make it, it's giving them a stake in their company / ship / their pirate group. So like it would reduce the chance of them mutinying because they now have a stake in the success of this, mm-hmm. or at least like delay the mutiny basically. So I think it was a good move, like strategically, since they were about to mutiny, to like be like, hey, let's make this your own, like you picked the scary thing. So I thought that was really brilliant.
Yeah, I do like how Steed treats people as equals rather than
people too.
Yeah.
Things.
Humanity.
Which is, again, atypical for pirates because, like, you know, you see the way the other pirates treat them when Izzy's in charge. He's like, you're just labor. He's like, why aren't you working? You're not allowed to sit around. You're not allowed to eat unless I tell you. Like, Steve sees them like people, like, you know, which is not common, again, in this atmosphere. Another thing I love from the flag-making scene is we learn about Wee John. He admits that he used to sew dresses with his mother, which I think is adorable and, like, comes up later as, like, part of his character, which I think is cute.
This line was actually ad-libbed by the actor because his mother used to make dresses for him to be used in drag. And I forget if he made it with her or if she just made it, but that's cute. That's how he came up with that line.
I love that. Also the improv. It's great.
I love that they were allowed to improv things. In the same interview I talked about earlier, Taika was like, they mentioned that Taika had said that he can figure out if someone's good at improv and he lets the people who are good do it. And if you're not good at it, you're not allowed to improv.
That's funny.
Which I mean is fair. But how do you get better at improv if you don't try? But then you'd be there all day if they're like terrible
improv. We ain't got time for that. We ain't got time for that.
So he's like, I'm too experienced for this. But back to the preschool thing, because like this is, the more you look into it, the more it is. Steed also made sure they had all the amenities for their special classes. They had a library class, gym class, a music room, a ballroom.
In case things get fancy, you never know.
No, the ballroom was cannonballs.
Oh, cannonball. Just kidding.
But I also love that they got paid no matter what. And they're like, it's odd that they wanted the mutiny in the beginning. And, like, I guess it's not the typical lifestyle that they were expecting as a pirate, but they really are getting treated well just normally. It's like they're having... They get paid no matter what. Like, even if they don't actually get anything from pirating. Which, where is he getting this money? Like, because at some point this money has to... you just muted yourself.
So they mentioned, it's because the vacuum is going, they mentioned it in the beginning, but basically he sold off like a portion of his land before he got on the ship, like to pay for the ship and then for him to have money. So there's got to be like money stowed away on this ship somewhere because he, and I think smartly he was like, well, they're going to kill me and steal the money. So he probably had like probably one of his secret compartments that he had built into the ship because nobody knows the schematics except him, probably houses all the money that he has.
I wonder if it's not liquid money and it's just because he talked about one piece of furniture that was maybe a family heirloom or like something armor, that was really expensive. So I wonder if he has items like that as the money. Them. Yeah.
I think it's both. I think he has money because like at one point he's like, yeah, we stopped somewhere and I bought all this marmalade. Like he has liquid money where he's like buying shit and like he has to pay them in money. I mean, their wages were like nothing compared because of wage disparity. It was nothing compared to the money he had. But yeah, like the reason they're not happy is because he's not a fearsome captain. Like if they've pirated before, like they're like, what is this? Like this man cannot be serious. He cannot seriously pay us every week. That's crazy. And we're not looting. Like, how are we going to keep going? So like, I understand why they're skeptical because they're like, this isn't pirating. This is ridiculous.
This is
because they're unlearning
going on a
behavior.
Cruise for free, getting paid for it. This is going on a cruise for free and getting paid for it.
Literally. So like as time goes on, like the smart ones are like, this is a sweet gig. Like eventually they're like, this is a sweet gig. Shut up. But, you know, if you're trying to compare yourself to like, you know, the goal is to like work for Blackbeard. This is the opposite of Blackbeard.
Yeah.
Like,
you're not going to get there.
Right. So part of being a pirate is desperation because you have no other financial options. So you sell yourself to be gay, do crime, basically. The other thing is like why Steed did it. It's like, oh, it sounds like an adventure, or like some people are like, I do it for glory. It's like, what glory you're gonna get working for Steed? Like, you know, you're not gonna just get respect.
Which
on the ship, but like they're a laughing stock in the community of pirates. So like, that's what ship, I mean. Yeah. Like that's not glory, like you know, the way men seek glory by doing these things. So
but I love Steed's reasoning behind paying them no matter what. And he says that is a lot of mental pressure to steal to live. So he wants his crew to know they will always be able to eat. And that's a huge thing in life today, even, because people don't know where their next meal is coming from. And that's why they need people looking out for them.
I mean, that is literally the reason why all these men turned to piracy, because they didn't know where their next meal was coming from, because they couldn't find work. Like, that's how they became pirates. Like, because there's a conversation later that happens with Ulau and Steed, where he's like, Steed, this is all like fantastical and like mythical sounding and fun sounding to you. But he's like, we're not here because of that. We're here because we had no other option. Like, so he is in a way treating them better than they would have ever been treated. Like, that's the reason they became pirates. They didn't have safety. They didn't have financial security. And like, I think part of them resents Steed because they're like, you gave up all of that to like choose mm-hmm. this ridiculous life that we had no other option but to do. So it's like kind of a clashing of things that's happening there, that like some of them, I wouldn't blame them if they were resentful of Steve, because he's the Steed, for like choosing to abandon the thing they would have literally killed to have, which was financial security and all that kind of stuff.
That is fair. It's yeah. kind of like the grass is greener thing.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. Like, totally, totally, totally.
But basically, Steed is just very super liberal.
Yeah, I mean, they paint him as kind of like forward thinking in a way, but he isn't. I think he's just trying to do things in a more civilized way. He's like, you know, when he was on his plantation or whatever, like, I'm sure there were some employees that he paid and was like, well, if I give them food and like they have their next meal, they won't revolt, like, you know, things like
that. He's basically trying to merge both lives.
Yeah, no, that is the problem. He is trying to merge and not like fully commit to one life mm-hmm. or the other, which is what gets him in trouble in season one for absolute sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll skip here. Yeah. Okay. So one thing, so kind of touch on this a little bit. Something I do like about the show, because it is fiction by Galen. It is like a fiction AU, basically alternate universe fiction. So it does a good job of being like funny and like a little, not self-aware, but you know, they do things where they like invent fan fiction and like they, you know, they keep
it. I love the fan fiction comments.
That was so funny.
Whenever a show brings up fan fiction, I'm like, yes, you get it. You know what's happening.
But like to do that in the 1700s where like there was no fanfic. Like, I think it's relatable to a modern audience, I guess is what I'm saying. And like, so when you, the fact that you called Steve liberal, like, and he's relatable to a modern audience who's like, yeah, that's how you should treat employees. But like, that's atypical for his time period. So I think it does a good job of kind of like balancing, like, I don't know, like our modern brains with like the glorification of pirates, which is where Steve's mindset was, with like the harsh reality of like what pirating actually was and like why these people were actually pirates. They had no other option. They were desperate to like survive. And so I love that. And I love that it to us, Steed seems like the norm, but he's really not the norm for that time. And if, you know, you contrast that, and I've mentioned that, and contrasting that with his crew, who's like, you know, they were desperate to be pirates. And then, you know, Blackbeard too is another interesting kind of character where he's set up as like, yes, that's what a pirate should be. But then when you like peel back the layers of Blackbeard and you're like, this is a traumatized human. Like the reality, like, it's like, all you know is the legend of Blackbeard. Like they, you know, Izzy pulls out the, or Steed pulls out the book, Izzy does too, where it's like, this is a picture of Blackbeard, like the fan fiction version, like the legend, the scary person. But like, when you meet him, he's like, he's just a person who's been through hell. And like, he's also just trying to survive like all these other pirates. And so it's like the glorification versus like the realities of it. I think they do a good job of balancing that in the show in a really good way.
I believe it's Black Pete. For some reason that sounds wrong to me.
No, it's,
that's, yeah, but that's so Black Pete, like, even when he's describing Blackbeard, it's, oh, like smoke and glowing.
Right, he doesn't have a head, he's just smoke. Yeah, like, exactly, because they don't know him at all. It's clearly they're just buying into all the stories of Blackbeard, that's the fan fiction really of him of the day, the oral fan fiction that gets like told about him. But then when you meet him, you're like, he's just a sad, lonely person, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so a big part of the representation on this show is Jim. Jim's secret identity is, I had no idea where this was going. I thought that this is just what who Jim was. I mean, that's what you're supposed to think until the whole disguise scene. So when we first meet Jim, they are a guy who is mute. mute for a good reason. First of all, you don't want they're probably like so excited that they're a mute because they didn't have to have these meaningless conversations. And we then find out that they killed one of Spanish Jackie's 20, now 19, later 18, husbands and have gone into hiding with Olu. It's important to note that Jim killed the guy to get revenge on the guy who killed, I think it's the same guy. Like, they made sure to kill the same person who killed her father, and her mission is to kill all 7 people involved in that massacre.
Yeah, the thing that starts the feud with Spanish Jackie is that Spanish Jackie's favorite husband is the one that killed Jim's dad and basically took over their entire estate. And so, yeah, that starts the feud.
Yeah. And then it's more of Jim's backstory. Is Jim was taken in by a nun when they became an orphan and was taught patience to kill and to butcher all to get revenge. And we get a scene of little Jim trying to capture this mouse. And I forget the nun's name. I'm terrible with names. But she's like, wait for it. Just wait. Wait for it to fully show itself and then capture it. So Jim has a lot of patience. It's quite ironic that a nun is teaching them to kill, though.
Nuns are wild people. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, have we seen nothing from Warrior Nun? So Spanish Jackie ends up setting a trap, knowing that Jim would come back if she bruised their ego. So egos go pretty far. Anywhere, any time period. Everyone has an ego. But Spanish Jackie knows Jim. So I feel like there's more. I want to see more flashbacks between their interactions.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so the trap worked. At the end of the episode, Jim's identity is revealed. So basically, Spanish Jackie spotted Jim. Jim tried to come in with their disguise on that everyone else thinks is not a disguise. And Spanish Jackie like pretends to flirt with them. And it's just, it's hilarious. And you think, Jim thinks that they're getting away with it. And at the end, they are getting taken. Sorry, there's so many like takeovers that it blends together in my brain on this ship. But basically, the guy who works for Spanish Jackie takes off Jim's beard and takes off the prosthetic nose. And so everyone knows that Jim isn't who they say they are. And it takes a while for the crew to understand Jim afterwards.
Oh my god, this was the best. So to clarify, Ulal was the only person who knew who Jim was. But now the whole crew finds out that Jim is not this mute guy that they thought Jim was.
Yes, okay. And like that seems to be the hardest part for the entire crew to understand is that Jim isn't mute. I love how that was the first thing they picked on. Not the I mean, yeah, the guy thing was a big part, but the mute thing was, I think, the first one. They're like, you're not mute. And then it becomes like, is Jim going to keep their name? Because Jim is strictly for dudes. But apparently the name Margaret could be either. That was hilarious.
Hey, English names are weird. Like some English names that we use now for like one gender was the other gender way back in that time period. So like, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Names are interesting in general. Like, we make fun of celebrities for naming kids, like, Apple and things, but, like...
As you should.
But, like, common people name kids weird things all the time anyway. But, anyway, Buttons make sure to say that he wants to be called Jim if Jim is no longer using the name. Was is it Buttons? I don't remember.
I think it was the Swede. The Swede's like, well, because like the Swede doesn't have a name. They just call him the Swede. So he's like, well, you're not using Jim.
That makes more sense. For some reason, even when I was researching for interviews, I get Buttons and Swede confused, just the character names, and I don't know why. But so forgive me. And then we get to the mermaid conversation. The crew thinks Jim is a mermaid, much to Jim's dismay. And to be fair, they are trying to just make sense of it, and they've probably never met a non-binary person before. And I don't think we ever have them saying that they are non-binary. Like, we don't get that conversation with their pronouns, I believe.
So here's the deal. Like, there is no language for that at this particular time. So the fact that they do things like, quote, invent the term fan fiction on the fly and things like that, like, mm-hmm. they're trying to use term, like, they will invent, like, Frenchie often does that where he's like, we'll call this a reading nook. And, like, things like that, where they, like, invent modern terms, like, and we watch them do it in real time on the show. There is no language for non-binary. I don't even know if there's language for gay. Like, you never hear that term either. Like, these weren't, like, common term.
No, we do use, we do hear the word
gay. Do they? Okay.
Well, yeah, like, it's the Mary Steed conversation.
Okay. Wait, like, queer wouldn't be a term that, queer that as a word would have been used differently. It means odd, not, like, not a way to describe a sexuality. Like, so.
I might be wrong about that, by the way. I don't know if the word was used.
But either way, it doesn't matter. Like, that like, gender was not thought of like that in English society, which is where a lot of these people are kind of coming from. So like, I don't know that they would necessarily have a common language to describe this is what I'm getting at. And so what they're doing in this scene is they're having the conversation about Jim's gender a little bit, like who Jim really is, but they don't have the language for it. So that's why they're like, are you a mermaid? Like, they're trying to figure it out, but they're using the language that they know. They're seafaring people. They're like, mermaid. Does that make sense, Jim? Like, really, what is your name now then? Like,
I feel like,
who are you?
Especially back then, like, mermaid is kind of gender neutral. I mean, there's nothing. There's just a tail.
Maid.
Well,
is, I know, means with female. The word, so, like,
but,
no.
Yeah, but like,
actually,
I just mean
term.
I did.
Yeah, visually, I guess, like, you could argue.
Because I know, not, I don't know personally, but like, I heard that a lot of trans people have a connection with mer people, we'll say, because it's just, there's just a tail. So there's no, doesn't matter what genitalia you have. So
yeah, that is true. And like, yeah, that maybe that's the metaphor that they're using for the term they don't have. That's very, very plausible. So while maybe, it's funny to us to be like, oh, they think Jim's a mermaid, like, they're having a conversation about Jim's gender right now, really, in like the language that they possess. Which is super clever, and I like the way this whole conversation goes, because nobody's judging Jim. They're just trying to understand. They're like, well, what are we, who are you? Like, we've been living with basically a stranger this whole time. Like, what's your name? Like, what do we call you? The one problem I have with it, too, is when they're like, well, you gotta leave the ship, though, because, like, women can't be on the ship, because there's a, because, again, Frenchie goes into the superstition, like, women on board cause curses and things like that, and which was a superstition. And Jim shuts that shit down. Jim's like, I've been here the whole time.
So, and then they're like, we did get captured or whatever.
Yeah, we did get raided not that long ago. And he's like, that's like, the only time.
But so. Like, that's, you should have been raided more, let's be honest. But I guess in their world, a mer person is possible. I mean, Buttons is a seagull.
Buttons is basically a sea witch. Like, let's be real. I'm not kidding. I
got that right. Like, Buttons is the sequel person,
yes,
right?
Correct.
Okay,
that's
just making sure.
Yeah, but I do love the, I love this whole conversation. I love, this is how the writers choose to have, like, quote, a coming out, Jim coming out to the crew kind of conversation. And the resolution is just, keep calling me Jim. Basically, like, Jim is like, what has really changed? Like, I thought this was so beautiful and executed so well. Because the crew really, at the end of the day, they're struggling to put Jim in a box. Like, they're struggling to be like, oh, how do we think of you, Jim? Because before, we just thought of you as Jim the mute guy, but you're not a mute guy, and you might not be Jim. Like, what, like, who are you, is, like, what they're trying to get at. And because Jim is this non-binary character that doesn't fit, like, traditional labels, like I said, for the language they had at the time, like, Jim doesn't even have the language to explain who they are. Like, I highly doubt that. So at the end of the day, Jim is just like, I'm the same old person who's been part of this crew this whole time. And once the conversation is framed like that, that's when the crew relaxes and they're like, oh, we know who Jim is. Jim's a great guy. We love Jim. Like, so once they're like, okay, nothing has actually changed now that you've told us this part of you. Like, I love that. It's just a good, like, queer experience of like coming out and like the people who don't understand, like, process it and go like, oh, you are the same person you were a minute ago. Okay, we love Jim. Jim's a great guy. And it's just like, just keep thinking of me as Jim. That's it. Nothing has actually changed. I just love the way it's resolved.
I'm also wondering if becoming Jim helped them as a person to really come into their own, because sure. I believe they were female presenting beforehand.
Yeah, so
this is their way of exploring more who they are. For and sure. This is like the first time that they could be themselves. Yeah. And like, finally, this is a weight that everyone knows. Everyone knows now. Like, I can. And you get to see Jim become Jim now, because you don't know who they are. And you see the personality start to come out. And I love it. You see Vico's personality start to come out.
Yeah, it's just Vico's. Just great. And no, but like, we'll get to that later when we get to the episode where like Jim goes home, quote, mm-hmm. to St. Augustine. And like, I'll talk about it there later. But yeah, Jim made a transformation in this moment too. So I think I agree with you. I think Jim is owning a bit. Like, that's the whole point of the show, like I said. So I think Jim is starting to own who they are, basically.
Yeah.
And not that they didn't, but it's like Jim is not hiding it. So then mm-hmm. we, the audience, get to see it. All right, cool. So that was like basically episode two. Episode three, this is when we go to the Republic of Pirates, which the Republic of Pirates is actually like this. What we see in the show is based on a real place that was in the Bahamas during the golden age of piracy, which is when this show is basically taking place. And it was basically like a hub and like a safe space for pirates. And it was basically ruled by this like informal pirate code that all the pirates had going on. So even though they're like lawless, like pirates had their own code amongst each other for like respect and like
civility. I feel like it's a typical thing to have. Like any type of people who come together to have like this, not government, but these like set of rules and how you behave. And
it's called the social contract. Anytime you have a society, quote, there are a set of rules established for like behavior and like interactions and things. It's called the societal code. So yeah, this is the pirates are making their own version of that, because they don't have a land that they're tied to, but they're on the sea. They have this hub. We're going to behave this way when we're here. This is our code.
I'm glad you know all this. I learned so much when I talk to you.
I just learn things as I go along. All right. So it's ruled by the informal pirate code. But in the show, it's run by Spanish Jackie and her husband. And I will say, casting Leslie Jones as Spanish Jackie is incredible. Who's not Spanish, which I love. Some of my favorite conversations are like, why do you call me? Are you Spanish? No. Why do they call you that? I don't know. She's Spanish Jackie. She's so good in this role. It's so funny. I also love that she's framed as this big feared boss bitch. And she simultaneously has 20, now 19, later 18 husbands. And no one bats an eye at that. They're like, yep, Jackie and her husbands.
Oh, that's like just fine.
It just, nobody cares. Because again, like, it's lawless. Like, nobody cares. Like, is that what Jackie wants to do? That's what Jackie gets to do that. It's so funny. Oh, but she has a harem of men, which is fantastic. Other thing I love about Spanish Jackie, that, because you think about it, the writers had to write most of these things in. Somebody decided to write in the nose jar as a thing that Jackie did. It's an intimidation tactic. You fuck around and find out, and Jackie takes your nose, right? And I love that not only it exists, but it's a plot point also.
And it's not fake. I thought maybe it was just like to scare people. No, we see it happen later.
We see it, and it's a plot point. So like, kudos to the writers that were just like, this is funny, but also let's make it important. I do love that. Okay, so that's the Republic of Pirates. So when Steed and his crew decide, so I think they end up going there. I don't know why they end up going there. But anyway, they're there. Oh, because they have,
need to get oranges because the sweet.
No, that's St. Augustine.
Oh, damn it. They're there, oh, that's because, right. Thank you.
They're there because they have British hostages
Oh yeah, they at this point, men for sale.
Yeah, and so they're trying to sell them. Dean takes them to the Republic of Pirates. He's like, maybe some pirates will want them. Okay, and before they, when Steed's proposing this on the ship, Ulo's like, trying to like convince him not to do it. And he's like, no, you don't want to go there. Steed, it's so touristy now. Like, to try to dissuade him. He's like, it's not authentic. You're trying to be an authentic pirate, right? So they go anyway. And then when Steed gets there with the hostage, he starts acting like a tourist. Like, they find this like skeleton that's got a sign on it that says, behave yourselves, and like he's in front of her, and he's like, Lucius, sketch us, like of course, like take our photo. That's what he's saying. So I love that Ulao can like read Steve, and he's like, no, don't go there, it's touristy. And that's like literally what Steve does.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah, that's, I love Steve.
Steve, he's such a child sometimes. But the reason he really wanted to go here, not just to like sell the hostages, but also like this is where Steve is kind of using this as like basically his introduction to pirate society and launching his career as the gentleman pirate, as if you will, by going to Spanish Jackie's with a hostage, like a British officer. Like, it's a big deal that he has this guy. And so he's like, quote, coming out to the pirate community, basically, is what he's doing. And as you can imagine, it doesn't go well because the nose jar gets destroyed, and then we start this feud with Spanish Jackie like immediately.
Yeah. Spanish Jackie is not too happy with the crew this entire season. You know what? Let's be real. They will always have beef.
Oh, always. Always. This was a disaster. But what I find very interesting about this whole thing, when Steve goes in there and breaks the nose jar, so Spanish Jackie wants to kill him because the nose jar is really important to Spanish Jackie. And so the thing that stops her, because she's basically got like Steed at like knife point. And the thing that stops her is Blackbeard, aka Ed. So he ends up saving Steed before they even meet. Because while this is happening, I think somebody lets it drop that like this is the guy Blackbeard's interested in. Like, because Izzy has been going around trying to find, because Blackbeard was like, gentleman pirate, this is intriguing, go find him. And so Izzy was in here looking for him, and they're like, oh, this is the guy that Blackbeard is looking for. And that's what stops Jackie. So my read on this is because Blackbeard, aka Ed, claimed Steed as like a person of interest, basically, the other pirates are like, we better not touch this guy because Blackbeard wants him. And so it's like, out of respect for Blackbeard, but really like Ed ends up saving Steed before they even meet, which is very cute, and I love it.
Well, yeah, because they don't want to be on Ed's shit list either.
No, absolutely. Because of the legend of Blackbeard, right? They're like, he'll make his own nose jar, but we don't want to be involved with that. So Izzy at this point is like trailing Steed because Ed's interested in him, basically. And he goes back because like Izzy went there to be like, Blackbeard wants to talk to you. And Izzy wants nothing to do with this fuckery. So he's just like, whatever, Steed. And he goes back to Blackbeard and he's like, and falsely basically reports that Steed outright rejected Blackbeard. Because when they meet, Steed's like, you could suck eggs in hell. Which, what a line. That felt very improv, but I don't know. It was great.
You can usually, we'll get there later, but like you can tell when Taika and Reese improv together.
Oh, for sure, together.
Because it's like when their stories become mumbled, it's like that's definitely fully improv'd.
Yeah. But I mean, Taika wasn't in the scene, it was just Izzy and Steed. And but instead of like, so Izzy was like, oh, if he says that, Blackbeard's gonna go into a rage and want to kill this guy. But it is the opposite, it only like intrigues him more because he's like, who says that to Blackbeard? Like, I need to meet this guy. This guy's like, doesn't act like all the other pirates. Cause like, see Spanish Jackie's behavior. The minute Blackbeard comes up, Jackie's like, whatever he wants, whatever. Like, he's the pirate king. But Steed's out here not knowing the rules and the etiquette. And he's just like, fuck that guy. Like, this and that. And so Blackbeard's like, this is exciting and interesting. So I love that. Cause, Steve doesn't know the pirate code enough to pay, like, to follow it. So he's like breaking all these rules. He has no idea he's breaking. And it's like,
Steve's playing hard to get.
Yeah, no, totally. It. Exactly. And Blackbeard's like falling hook, line, and sinker for that. I love it. And so up to kind of this point in the show, we haven't really like met Blackbeard. We've seen like silhouettes and like the back of his head and things like that. It's like implied that it's Blackbeard, but
Blackbeard was too busy directing episode one.
Yeah. But it's again, because we're supposed to think of him as the legend. We don't see him. So we're just like, oh, we feel his presence and like the way he talks to people. And just we're supposed to view him as the legend. And then finally in this episode, we actually see Blackbeard's face. And one of the things I found really interesting when I first started watching the show is that when we meet Blackbeard, his beard isn't black anymore. So, which is like funny, but at the same time, to me, I was like, oh, this is a visual indicator that like, Ed no longer feels connected to Blackbeard, because Blackbeard's a persona, right? It's a Blackbeard's a legend. Like Blackbeard's not really a person. Ed is the person underneath that like visage, basically. And so to me, this shows that I think it's important that when we meet him, he actually doesn't have a black beard. To me, I think that shows that he's on the cusp of like a metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. Like Blackbeard is like the caterpillar, and then like the butterfly is like Ed. So we're in the middle of a transformation with this character. So I thought that was a really good detail that they did in the show that they didn't have to do.
Did dyeing hair exist back then, do you know?
I mean, it did, but usually for like wealthy women who could pay to keep the dyes intact and buy the expensive ingredients and like a life on sea. I don't think the dyes of the day were gonna like stay in your hair.
That's fair. I was just wondering if it was, like, even a possibility to, like, if he even wanted to keep the persona intact with Blackbeard.
I'm sure there was a way that would have been really expensive, and he probably could have done it if he wanted to. He's Blackbeard, you know.
Yeah, all he had to do was intimidate someone to help him.
Exactly. And I just want to close out this episode with somebody I love who's Buttons. Like, just everything about Buttons. I just love this character because I feel like Buttons is the most like authentic person that we meet in the show, like from start to finish. Like Buttons is just Buttons. Like there's no mystery there. It's like you get
there's
what
no
you
growth,
see.
There's no decline. There's just Buttons.
Buttons is just Buttons.
Well, no, there is growth because we will talk about it in season two, but
yeah, though there's definitely like a character arc and stuff like that, but like there's no, like, mask. There's no, like, mystery. Like, Buttons is just very much himself, like, the whole time. And one of my favorite lines from Buttons is when he's, like, I forget what it was. I forget if it was Steed or Ed, but basically they had the crew together and they're, like, be honest about, like, your feelings or whatever. And Buttons is, like, I yearn to make love to the sea. And there's, like, that's too much, Buttons. That's too honest.
One of my favorite Buttons line is, those dots look Spanish.
Oh my god, when he sees the ship.
What makes a dot look Spanish?
I think that's supposed to imply that, like, he has, like, bird vision or, like, extra sight beyond humans, and so he can see that the ships look Spanish.
Wasn't he wrong, though?
No, he was right.
Oh, okay.
And the thing, and because if you remember in the scene, basically, like, one of the captains was looking through the telescope and Buttons wasn't. He's just looking. He's like, those look Spanish. Oh, I see some dots. And I'm like, they look Spanish. And they were Spanish ships.
So, and I love Buttons his, like, knows all.
Button knows all. And he also has some telepathy link to the seagulls, particularly Carl and Carl's wife,
Olivia.
Who shows up later. Oh my god. I love R.I.P. Carl. I love Carl. That was
oh my gosh, that whole scene. Oh my gosh. Buttons was destroyed.
Valid. Very valid.
But like, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but just like that being that was the breaking point for Steed in that episode. And it was awesome because Steed's like, this is my crew. You do not mess with
them. No. No. Yeah, well, I have many things to say about that scene, but just, like, I love Buttons, the bird guy.
Obviously, we have so much to talk about this entire show, that's why.
It's so good, but that was the first three episodes of season one of Our Flag Means Death. Like, we obviously missed things. If you had favorite moments, things you noticed, likes, dislikes, please leave it in the comments, find us on social media, like... There's so much to say about the show. It's incredible. And so we're doing our best to cover our main highlights and things we noticed. But, like, please share your thoughts. I love learning new things. What was improv? What wasn't? Like, tell us all the things. We would love to hear from you.
Yes.
But We will continue our discussion. We'll pick it up with episode, I think, four.
I have a lot to say about four. I love
so
four.
Much to say. Caitlin was super into episode four. So
just like it's visually stunning. I'm just saying.
Just in general, we'll leave it here. The cinematography in the show is so good. And one thing I really love, which I think this is a set design thing, is the way they really commit to the fact that like they are on ships. So anytime you see chandeliers, they're always swinging and stuff.
Oh, I never like noticed that.
It's little things like that. Like, yeah, they very much commit
they're
to the
very
fact
that detail-oriented.
Super detail-oriented, yeah. And I very much appreciate that. It just, it really sucks you into the show and just makes it feel very, like, real. And, like, there's not a lot of, like, when I watch some shows, it's like you have to suspend disbelief. This show, like, I ever get that feeling from it. Like, yeah, there's, like, it's a historical AU. Yeah. It's loosely based on stuff. There's that. But, like, the show feels very, like the world feels complete, if that makes sense. And so like, I'm never like suspending disbelief in the show. It's very, very well done. Cool. All right. So next time we will get into episode four and so much, much more. And Zoe's going to join us. Yes. So be excited for that. And until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the ship. Bye.
And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. Thank you for listening. We'd really appreciate it if you downloaded this episode and left us a review, no matter how brief. Your contribution will help us reach a wider audience.
We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all social media platforms at Big Gay Energy Pod or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com.
Join our Discord server to connect with us and our friends who also love queer media. The link to join is in our episode description below.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store on biggayenergypod.com or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more.
Until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus
and gay it up all over the place.